This is A Sustainable Mind, episode 79. Today we speak with Jackie Marks, part of the Sustainability Communications Team at the Marine Stewardship Council. We'll be chatting about sustainable fish and how a cookbook is assisting the MSC with their mission to help Americans cook seafood that is good for both people and planet. But before we get into that, I just wanted to remind you to mark your calendar for our very first live event. Mass Eco Live will take place this April 30th through May 2nd, and it will be 3 days of keynotes, panel discussions, and workshops. To get more info, head on over to masseco-live.com. Welcome to A Sustainable Mind, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups, inspiring the environmental changemakers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Jackie Marks is a sustainability communications professional with a passion for protecting animals and the planet. At the Marine Stewardship Council, Jackie and her team aim to drive greater consumer awareness of the MSC Bluefish label and the important role that certified sustainable fisheries play in protecting our oceans. Jackie is the recipient of the Washington Women in Public Relations Award for Emerging Leaders. That was back in 2019. And she was also a speaker at the United Nations World Wildlife Day at the UNHQ in February 2019, and has been quoted in Civil Eats, USA Today, and the Associated Press, among others. She holds a master's degree in international relations and natural resources and sustainable development. She also has a bachelor's degree in environmental studies. Welcome to the show, Jackie.
Thank you, Marjorie. It is so good to be here with you.
Absolutely. So let's get started with how nature, the environment, and sustainability played a role in your childhood growing up. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'll give you the cliff notes of that. But I really had the great pleasure and privilege to travel the world when I was a young child. And that is because my dad was in the Foreign Service. And so we moved countries every few years. So I lived in East Africa, US, Asia, Middle East, Europe, and that was all by the time I was 13. And so I saw a lot of different countries, cultures, and environments, and it gave me a very big appreciation of the world. And I think that sort of coupled with my love of animals, I've always had a love of animals. And I think that really sort of set the tone for me as I grew up and as I continue to travel. It's always been something that's very important to me. And I have my own pets at home now, and it has definitely played a part in my career too.
So let's talk about kind of your roadmap to the career that you have now. What exactly did that look like? What were your aspirations as a young adult? And was it more of a direct journey, or was it kind of a circuitous one?
It was like a roller coaster. It was all over the place. And, you know, there was definitely no sort of direct path for me. And I like sharing that story. And I think a lot of people have that same experience because, you know, it's really hard to have that direct path and really understand what it is your path is going to be at an early age, or at least that's my experience. But some of the things that paved the path for me was I got my scuba license when I was in high school. And that was a real transformative experience because although I had snorkeled before, you know, being beneath the surface at eye level with fish and coral and all the incredible creatures underwater was really, really special. And I really wish everyone had an opportunity to experience that because you're on a whole nother level with the planet in some ways. Mm-hmm. And then I think when I was in high school and thinking about my future and my career path, I don't think working with animals was really something that I thought as a possibility other than potentially going to veterinary school, which is something that I wasn't really interested in. I knew that wasn't a good path for me. So, you know, I think early on, you know, I had an idea that I was also very interested in psychology and criminology. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I started as my undergrad. I started as a psych major. And at the time I went to a college that had a farm on its campus, which I think is pretty rare. It was a farm and a nature center. There were lots of wild animals that were being rehabilitated there or that couldn't be rehabilitated and lived there permanently. There were also like discarded pets. So we had everything from a really incredible collection of falcons and hawks and eagles. And then also sort of prairie dogs that people had in their homes, which they didn't want anymore, or ferrets or lizards. And so I was a caretaker for these animals, and I loved that job. And that was one of my my bright spots when I was in college. And at some point, you know, seeing the people that I worked with at that nature center really made me realize that you can have a career working with animals and working to protect the environment. And so I switched majors from psychology to environmental studies. And so that's what I got my bachelor's degree in. So it was sort of all over the place. No straight line.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think a lot of people throughout their life, even after they start their career, have a lot of those ups and downs and twists and turns. And even myself, I'm at this point reimagining my career, gosh, for the second, maybe third time now, as I'm starting to kind of further embrace this scientific communicator label that people have kind of given me because of this show. What advice would you give to young people and maybe even older individuals that are looking to switch career paths that want to get into the physical sciences? So maybe they're not in college, so they're not really going into a major yet, or maybe they're post-college and don't necessarily want to get another degree. What's kind of one or two steps that they can take to kind of get further along in environmental sciences or physical sciences like that?
I think something that's really important is to try lots of different things, because it's important to understand what you don't like as much as it is to understand what you do like.
Yeah.
And I learned that early on in my career. I had an internship that was focused on policy, and it became very clear to me that policy was not the right fit for me. So I think it's really important to try different things, to, you know, look at different fields to see what might fit for you and what might not. And it's okay if it doesn't fit for you. It's good for you to know that it doesn't. And so there's lots of different ways to get connected, whether it's through local environmental groups, whether there are, you know, online groups that you can be a part of, you know, looking for career or coaching opportunities, or looking for sort of buddies or professional contacts that might be working in that space. I'm a big believer in reaching out and looking for people who have been there and who have done that and who are willing to mentor. And that's definitely something that has been an important part of my career. And I try to pay back is being, you know, a mentor for other people, simply answering questions for them, simply sharing your story. And exactly what we're doing here is so important for people to understand that, you know, it's not necessarily simple. It's not necessarily going to be easy, but here are some things that you can try. And this was my experience, and it might help you as well.
That is excellent advice. Yes, there are always people that are out there doing the work that you already want to do, and trying to, you know, get in touch with them, maybe volunteer the organizations that they work for or work at, and see if you can get your hands dirty. I certainly have done that through volunteer opportunities over the years, and I think it's a great way to get your foot in the door for sure.
Absolutely. And one thing I'll say too is one thing that I did that was incredibly valuable from a career perspective was I was looking to make a career switch. A few years ago, I was working in the sustainable chocolate world, or cocoa,
oh, wow,
which was delicious, but it wasn't where my heart was. I really wanted to be back in the fisheries and seafood world, which is where I'm at now. So something worked, but I joined a board. I joined a board of a local environmental organization. It's called DC Eco Women. So it's a local organization here in DC, but there are chapters around the country, and it's all about creating opportunities for, in this case, young women who are working in the environmental field. And so sitting on that board was a great way for me not only to sort of raise my experience, to use the experience that I had, but also to meet other people and see other people's expertise in work or in action. So that was really valuable for me.
That is a great point. Can you give us that organization one more time?
Absolutely. It is DC Eco Women.
Okay, perfect. And I think, yeah, that's a great resource. So often, I think, or at least my experience has been, maybe things are a little bit different now, is that when it comes to certain fields, especially science, there just aren't a lot of women. So to be a part of an organization or a volunteer group that is doing work with women specifically in the sciences, if you're a young woman, can feel like you can actually speak up, that you can, you know, step into your power in terms of getting involved and, you know, figuring out how you can make yourself useful in the work that you want to be closer to. So thank you very much for that resource.
Absolutely.
So let's start talking about the Marine Stewardship Council. For those that are uninitiated, can you introduce us to what that organization is about?
Yeah, absolutely. In short, the Marine Stewardship Council is a global nonprofit organization on a mission to end overfishing. Mm-hmm. And the way that we do that is through an eco-label and certification program. So as a consumer of seafood, you can go into most grocery stores in the United States, or in fact in the world, and go to the seafood section or the canned aisle, and you can find a seafood product that has the MSC Bluefish eco-label on it. And that means that that product includes seafood that has been wild caught, is certified sustainable, and is traceable back to a sustainable source.
So let's dig into what those three criteria really mean. Like, for instance, sustainably caught. What exactly does that mean?
That is one of the main principles that is part of the MSC Sustainable Fishing Standard. And it means that there isn't lasting damage on the environment or on other species that are interacting with your target species. So it's making sure that, you know, it's caught in a way that isn't causing lasting damage on the environment.
So for instance, we hear about, you know, bycatch, if it's a fishery that's using a lot of large nets. What is that called, by the way, when they're not using, or what are the different types? There's like line catching, and then there's nets, but I don't know the technical terms for it. What are those called?
There's so many different types of ways that seafood can be caught. It can be pole caught, pole and line caught. It can be purse seine. It can be dredged, or lots of different ways. And I should point out that, you know, the way that the fish is caught is very important, but it's more about how that fishing method is interacting with its environment. Hmm. So we're not, you know, coming in to say this method of fishing is better than that method of fishing. We're really looking at the full picture here to say, you know, this fish, this population of fish, and the way that it's being caught, and the way that this population of fish is being managed by a management body, those are the three sort of main principles that we look at to make sure that the entire ecosystem is taken into consideration when it comes to fishing.
Excellent, excellent. So let's dive into this blue fish label. Is that a new initiative? How exactly did it come about? And what sort of impacts are you all hoping that it has on the industry overall?
Yeah, it's not something that is new. We've been around for about 20 years now. And we're, as I mentioned before, we're really a global organization. And my focus is on the US, but globally around the world, you can find products with the MSC Bluefish on it. And there is probably every fish, every type of fish at every price point that you can find that's MSC certified sustainable. The origin story of the MSC it's an interesting one. It unfortunately, in the 90s, there was a fishery that was really struggling and it was overfished. And that is that were caught off the coast of Canada. Mm-hmm. And so two organizations really understood that something needed to be done in order to ensure that we could continue to have this resource into the future. And so those two organizations are the WWF, so the World Wildlife Foundation, and Unilever, which is a large multinational company. And the reason the two came together is WWF came in from, of course, a perspective of wanting to protect the resource, and Unilever came in for the same reason, but also thinking about their products that carried cod that wouldn't be available in the future if fishing continued at the current rate. Mm-hmm. So these two organizations came together and they basically decided that the Marine Stewardship Council needed to exist in order to ensure that fisheries could be fished into the future, and it could be done in a way that was sustainable, so both from an environmental perspective, but also from a product perspective. So that was 20 years ago. And, you know, there lots of products around the world have been carrying the MSC Bluefish label for more than two decades now.
Wow. So you all actually just released a cookbook, which I think is fascinating and actually a really good approach to trying to get people to consume more sustainable food in general, especially sustainable seafood. And a lot of people these days are going vegan or at least vegetarian, but that's not always an option. There are many cultures around the world that have been eating meat because they're coastal cultures, and that's makes up a huge amount of their diet. So it's really important that we understand that sustainable seafood is here to stay. So how is seafood still a healthy choice for people and planet? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, and I'm so glad to hear you say that, Marjorie, because, you know, more than ever, people are thinking about their food choices as it pertains to sort of our environmental footprint and our sort of impact on the planet. And I want people to know that sustainable seafood is a really important way for them to make a contribution to that footprint, to lightening their footprint. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because, you know, why, and I should caveat by saying that I'm talking about wild caught seafood only here. Mm-hmm. That's what the MSC focuses on. We have a sister organization that focuses on farmed seafood, but that's not what we're talking about today.
Okay.
So wild caught seafood is a low carbon protein. There are no inputs that go into it. You know, there's very little effort that needs to go into actually harvesting the product, unlike products that are grown on land or harvested on land. So that's one important thing to think about. And so when we see a product that is MSC certified, we know and we can feel good about it being something that is done in a way that is environmentally sustainable and not causing lasting damage to the environment. But back to your question about the cookbook, you know, we certainly know that we need to meet people where they are, and the food on their plate is an important way to do that. And we also know that seafood it can be a little bit intimidating. People think, you know, it's a special treat or it's something that, you know, they're really not comfortable cooking at home. But mm-hmm. we want Americans to know that seafood is simple. And we have a little acronym that we use. You know, it's KISS, or Keep It Simple and Sustainable.
Ooh,
and, and so we want people to keep it simple and sustainable in the kitchen. And that's why we created this cookbook, to show people that it's really not scary and you absolutely can and should be cooking seafood at home. And that's why we put this cookbook out. And it also happens to be American Heart Month. And we all know the health benefits that come with seafood. And it's, you know, it's part of the dietary guidelines of America. I'm sure you're hearing it from your mom, your parents, your nutritionist friends, whatever it might be. But seafood is so good for heart, eye, and brain development, you know, immunity, a lot of different things.
So this might be a weird question, but I actually, the person that I'm dating, I remember we were talking about cooking fish. She had never cooked fish before, and she was terrified of not removing all of the bones. Please tell me you address this in the book.
You know, okay, that's a great one. That's a really good question. That is not something we address in the book, but we do have, you know, lots of great videos from some ambassadors that we work with who are experts at what they do, like chefs, for example. And we've got some great tutorials on how to cook fish. I don't know if the bone question is one of them that we addressed, but I'm going to add it to the list, because if you're thinking about it, or your partner's thinking about it, someone else is definitely thinking about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I what I wound up watching, and it's so funny, you know, you search something on YouTube and all of a sudden you're down like a 2-hour rabbit hole. But there mm-hmm. was this video of this seafood butcher, and he literally took 23 different species of fish and, I guess, you know, deconstructed and filleted them all. It was fascinating, you know, how to debone a fish. It's interesting. I've done it. And the great thing about seafood for the most part is that if there are bones, they're kind of pliable. So as long as you cook it thoroughly, you should just be able to pull that out. But I know that some people are a little weird about that. Don't need to worry about it.
Fair point.
So I don't want to gloss over the fact that February is Heart Health Month. Please talk about that. You all have a campaign going on.
We do. And, you know, part of the reason for us sort of hosting this campaign at this time, you know, we are an environmental science NGO. So why are we talking about heart health? Well, it's important for us, like I said earlier, to sort of meet people where they are. Mm-hmm. And so while we can tell the story about the environmental benefits of certified sustainable seafood, we really wanted to sort of connect it to, again, people's lives and plates. And so if people are concerned about health, which a lot of people are talking about right now, especially, we want to be able to offer people, you know, a solution that is addressing both the health question, but also, you know, if people are thinking about their environmental footprint and their food choices. And we're seeing that, especially at this time of year, you know, it's February, it's the second month of the year. People have just set their resolutions for the year, right, whether that is from a health perspective or an environmental perspective. We want to marry the two. And so that's really what we're trying to do with this campaign, is to offer a solution to people who are thinking about health and environmental footprints, and saying you don't have to sort of choose one or the other when it comes to eating seafood. This is really a win-win that you can incorporate in your kitchens. And it's just, you know, a simple swap. And if you're already eating seafood, all you have to do is look for the blue fish to know that you're doing it in a way that's healthy for you and for the ocean.
And if you don't know what Jackie is talking about with the blue fish label, I will actually put an image of that in the show notes for this episode. So you can either look at the description on your device, or you can check that out at asustainablemind.com. But more importantly, check out their cookbook. And I will also have a link for that in the show notes. I wanted to go back one more time to the cookbook, because I think that it's such an awesome idea, you know, with Heart Health Month saying, yes, these are ways that you can switch things up to improve your heart health, but actually then walking them through exactly what to do in the form of recipes. And then, of course, I'm sure you guys have wedged in plenty of other educational elements into that. Why do a cookbook now? Why this timing specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to really honing in on the health question. You know, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, and we know that seafood is a healthy option. There's so many health benefits associated with it. And so the cookbook is such a great way to incorporate more simple seafood recipes into your everyday repertoire. It's actually, you know, we've seen a lot of really encouraging news in the last year in terms of seafood consumption at home. People are experimenting with more seafood than they have in the past. Seafood sales across every category, from fresh to canned, have increased in the last year. And so we're seeing people really showing an interest in wanting to eat and cook more seafood. So that's really encouraging. And we hope that this cookbook can make that a long-term sort of change that people are making at home, is really making it part of their everyday lives, and, you know, a regular sort of piece of their cooking repertoire. But another thing I would say too is that we enlisted the help of some chefs that, you know, are really experts in their field. We're a bunch of, you know, we're an environmental NGO. We're a bunch of scientists or communicators or whatever it is, but we're not cooks. And so we enlisted the help of some chefs who are experts at creating, you know, scrumptious, delicious meals. And they're the ones that contributed the recipes for the cookbook. And so, you know, we've got some experts, and their recipes are just gorgeous and delicious. And I've actually recreated some of them at home already. And I can say they are a hit. And one thing I would say too, is we actually dive in all of these recipes a little bit on the seafood that's included in them. So I'm just looking at the smoky cod and clam chowder by Chef Gregory Gourdet. He's a top chef out in Portland. And we break it down and talk a little bit about the species that are in that seafood dish. So we talk about clams, and we talk about where they're sourced from, and we talk a little bit about some really cool tips about clams. And so, you know, we're trying to create this atmosphere that's, you know, interesting as well as utilitarian with the cookbook itself. So we're really hoping that people see this as a resource that is both useful and interesting.
Fantastic. And again, I will have a link to this cookbook on the website, as well as the show notes for this episode. So before we delve into our 7 sustainable questions, we're going to have a word from our sponsor. If you've been listening to ASM for some time, you may know that in addition to producing this show, I also help aspiring and existing podcasters to successfully launch their shows, consistently produce interesting content, and grow their communities. Over the last 4 years, I've helped over 80 shows get off the ground, and I especially love working with podcasters that have a purpose, those that are using their words to advocate for the causes that they believe in. So if that is you and you're interested in starting a podcast or want a little bit of help growing your show, sign up for a free one-on-one strategy session with me. Head on over to asustainablemind.com/podcasting to sign up. Again, that's asm.com/podcasting for your free 30-minute strategy session. So, Jackie, can you share with us one long-standing habit that you believe has significantly improved your life?
Well, I'm still learning, I think, you know, navigating the same path that everybody is. But I think one thing that has definitely been a mainstay for me is the need for balance. And I sort of employ that in all aspects of my life. It's a balance of making sure that you're dedicating yourself to work, but you also have to balance that in your personal life, in your with your friendships and with your relationships. And so I think it's really important to think about everything, you know, that you're not giving too much of yourself in one category or not enough in another. So that can be, you know, whatever your focus is. If you are looking for a switch in your career, you still got to make sure that you're taking care of yourself. So while you are building those skills and making contacts and really trying to switch it up on the work side, make sure that you're taking care of yourself on the other side of things. So don't fully go in on anything. I think it's important that we reserve space to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves.
Excellent. Excellent. And what's one new habit that you are cultivating right now in your life?
I think probably is leaving a lighter footprint. And I say that from a lot of different perspectives, but, you know, definitely from a carbon footprint, just thinking about what I can do to make, you know, my home, my community, and then of course the planet a better place. And I'm thinking about it too, from a perspective of like, I compost at home, you know, I make sure that I have as little food waste as possible. I try to walk if I don't have to drive, you know, those types of things. So just thinking about how I can leave a lighter footprint. Also with my purchasing options, you know, with the clothes that I wear, am I upcycling? Am I thrifting? That type of thing. So it's really looking at it from every aspect of what I do.
And to piggyback on that, when it comes to sustainable habits on an everyday basis, those things don't always impact, or at least we don't think of them as impacting the ocean. But being that you work with the Marine Stewardship Council, what's one daily habit that we can change to have a lesser impact on our oceans that doesn't necessarily have to do with sustainable seafood itself?
That is a great question. And I think one answer to that would be food waste. You know, it's something that impacts every single one of us. If we're eating food, we have to keep into consideration food waste because, you know, food that ends up in the bin or in the garbage can contribute to carbon emissions. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, has an impact on the ocean. So right. We need to think about, you know, whatever waste that we're creating in the kitchen, in our fridges, in our garbage cans, and seeing how that can be repurposed, whether that is composting, if you have access to that, if it is using, you know, ends of vegetables for stock, you can repurpose something or really increase the lifespan of a single food, like taking rice that is on its, you know, on its last days, turning it into fried rice, or what you can make to sort of recreate a dish so that you're really not sort of contributing to any more carbon out there.
Or like me, making rice constantly new to do fried rice because I have fried rice like 3 times a week.
There you go.
It's one of my favorite dishes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And or like not creating, you know, not making more food than you need.
Right, right. So I know that a lot of people look up to the work that the Marine Stewardship Council does. I know that I came to your website to look for a lot of different resources over the years back when I was getting my master's degree in environmental studies. Whose work do you admire?
Oh, how much time do we have?
I'll give you 90 seconds.
Well, I'll you know, of course, the Rachel Carsons of the world and the Sylvia Earle, of course, they're, you know, those two women are incredibly influential and impactful in the ocean world and in my own experience and my own career. But I'm going to switch it up a little bit and think about the heroes that we don't necessarily think of as environmental heroes. But one for me is Anthony Bourdain. The late Anthony Bourdain was a real advocate for food waste, especially later in his career. He was really making sure that, you know, we're thinking about it from not just an environmental perspective, because that wasn't his sort of primary reason, but also from a food security perspective. You know, a lot of people out there aren't getting adequate resources to feed themselves and their families. And so making sure that we're equitable in our sort of food, our fight for food justice is really important. And Anthony Bourdain was a really important voice in that space. And he is dearly missed. And other people that sort of fall into that same category are Jose Andres. Chef Jose Andres is also a food hero and has been so influential in making sure that people are getting the right nourishment that they need. And so the food heroes are definitely a big one for me. I'm also just a food lover in general. So these are people that I look up to. And I would also include Chef Gregory Gourdet in that. He is an ambassador for the MSC program. But I've had the pleasure of speaking with him, and he truly is a sustainability advocate through and through. And he's thinking about it at every aspect of the restaurant that he's running right now. So, you know, I think that anyone can be an environmental hero in the work that they do. It's not, you know, just because they're chefs doesn't mean that they're not environmental heroes too. So those are some folks that I look up to. But I should also mention Ayana Elizabeth. She has been such an influential person on the marine side of things and in my career. And she runs an organization, I think, out of Brooklyn that really looks at the connection between urbanism and the ocean. And so she's just fascinating. And she's, you know, she's got a podcast. She's written several books. She's a UN speaker. She's just very inspiring.
Well, thank you so much for, like you said, you know, going outside the box a little bit, because when it comes to our environmental sustainability heroes, I think you're right. We kind of, you know, have very narrow focus when we think of what that looks like. And food heroes, yeah, that's absolutely right up there along with the rest. And for those that want to learn more about the people that Jackie just mentioned, I'm going to have all of these names listed in either their websites or some sort of resource where you can find out more about these individuals on the show notes for this episode. So check that out. Jackie, do you have an internet resource that you find helpful on a regular basis that you think would be beneficial to share with our listeners?
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure, you know, of course, the MSC website is a great one.
Yes, absolutely.
Thinking about seafood, but one newsletter actually that I read on a daily basis, and I rarely read emails, you know, or newsletters daily. That's just not going to happen. So this one, the fact that this one I actually read on a daily basis when it lands in my inbox, I think is pretty notable. It's called The Good Trade, and it's a marketing email that is run by a group of women, and a lot of their focus is on environmental issues or how you can incorporate more sort of eco-conscious living into your everyday lives. And so it really resonated with me, and it's what I love about it is it's very short. It's very to the point, and there's lots of great resources in there. So I am a big fan of their writing and of the great work that they're doing to make environmentalism or eco-friendly living much more accessible to people around the world.
Perfect, perfect. And as far as books go, do you have one that you would recommend to sustainable minds out there that are hoping to shift their mindset specifically to become the change that they want to see in the world?
I think that's a tough one because I don't think I've read that book yet. And I'm not the strongest reader, so that's part of the reason, but I just think there's so many fantastic books out there that I haven't read. But what I will say is, and this is a little bit to your point, your previous question, but you know, I think wherever you are in your sustainability journey, you know, there's a resource for you, whether it is following people on Instagram, on other social media channels, listening to podcasts like A Sustainable Mind, watching documentaries, going to lectures. You know, there are so many opportunities for people to become more engaged and to become more educated. So whatever that is for you, you know, I'm sure it's out there. And I think, you know, really sort of go for what you're interested in, whether it's reading a book or watching a documentary. There's so many great resources out there. So that's sort of my non-answer to your answer.
No, that's totally fine. And, you know, interestingly enough, I'm not the strongest reader either. It's not really something that I enjoy. I read, if I read anything, it's all nonfiction, how-to, informational stuff. But I do want to give a big shout out to just audiobooks in general. And if you're interested and not yet a member of Audible, head on over to asmbook.com and you can get a 30-day free trial on us. If you want to check out any sustainability resources in terms of audiobooks. And of course, if you have a library card, chances are that your library online has access to audiobooks on there as well. So if you're not into reading or you just don't have the time, you want to multitask or you're not the fastest reader, because I'm certainly not the fastest reader. I'm very, very slow. Definitely check out those resources. So I kind of want to end this interview on a fun note. And so I wanted to ask you, Jackie, if you could be any fish, which fish would you be and why?
This is an excellent question. If I could be any fish, which fish would I be and why? I mean, the first fish that comes to mind is a mola mola. Ooh. Or the ocean sunfish, which if you don't know what that is, you're going to have to Google it because it's just an incredible and also very strange looking fish. It is a very large fish and they're pretty rare to spot in the wild. But there was a YouTube video that popularized this fish several years ago where a few gentlemen in New England came across one swimming in the ocean and they thought it was a turtle. It's very bizarre, but it's the largest bony fish in the ocean, and it's just so unique. And I just think it's fascinating. And one of my life's goals is to see one in the wild. So I think that is probably the fish that I would pick.
Yeah. I'm looking at a photo online and it's fascinating. I mean, first of all, just the image of this fish itself is like you took a turtle and combined it with a blowfish, but flat, but combined that with a shark and then stuck a human's face on it.
That's a great description.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I will, I'll spell that out. I think it's, is it mola mola? Let's see. M-O-L-A-M-O-L-A. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely search that, 'cause that is a fascinating image. All right, Jackie. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I've really had fun in this conversation. And if people have listened to any amount of episodes, they know that I love the ocean and everything in it. So I really enjoy these conversations about marine animals and biology and seafood, things like that. I do want to give another plug to the Marine Stewardship Council. For those that are interested in learning more, you can go to msc.org. And then for specific links to both the cookbook and the Heart Health Campaign, I'll have those in the description. But Jackie, do you have any final words or parting pieces of guidance to share with Sustainable Minds out there?
You know, I think my parting words are just to keep exploring. And I mean that in the broadest sense. So keep exploring new professional opportunities, explore new friendships, explore new foods, especially seafood, explore new skills, explore new strengths, and really lean into where you're most comfortable and where you're able to make an impact at home, in your neighborhood, or in your community. And that's really how, you know, as environmentalists, collectively, we can make impact broadly.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us, Jackie.
Thank you so much for having me, Marjorie.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. To learn more about the Marine Stewardship Council, their new cookbook, and their heart health campaign, head on over to msc.org or check out the show notes for this episode at asustainablemind.com/079. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on A Sustainable Mind.